Where does that knowledge come from? Like, did you take a course? Like, did you just experiment? Like, where does it come from?
Yeah, so I have ADHD. So I like everyone that works in this field.
Perfect answer.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Geek Peek. Today, I have a special treat to celebrate the end of season two, and that is an interview with Jay Foster, also known as Swole Initiative. Jay is an amazing creator. We talked about his journey as a creator. He is an amazing D&D performer, both as a player and as a GM. Jay had a lot of interesting stuff to say about content creation in general, and also just storytelling. This was a fantastic conversation, and I enjoyed it a lot. I hope you will too. So, without further ado, enjoy the interview. Jay Foster, I'm so glad to have you here. How are you doing today?
I am well, yeah. I know this interview has been a long time coming. I'm so happy that our schedules finally like aligned and we're able to finally get this down. So yeah, I'm doing good, man. Thank you.
I'm so excited to talk to you. I've been watching a lot of content that you made over the years. And some of the things that you make and some of the storytelling that you do is so awesome. And I want to get to know the person behind that kind of storytelling skill. And before we actually get to where you are today, I want you to kind of share with us, who was Jay before content creation and Swole Initiative, your online moniker?
Yeah, okay. So, I'm a storyteller by nature, so if you need me to shorten answers, let me know. I guess that's how I kind of fell into it. So I got into D&D, like actually playing it around 2019, right before the pandemic hit, which was great. But yeah, so before that, I had done content creation before it was called content creation. So I was a my job that I had, I was a strength coach, strength and conditioning coach. So I used to coach athletes and things in Australia. And then over here, I was coaching just anybody that needed it. Be it an athlete, a bodybuilding competitor, or someone that just needed to lose weight, I was doing that. And so, on the side of that, I was also a nationally qualified power lifter in the squat, bench, and deadlift. And so, I got a sponsorship by a company called Flex Comics that I'm still sponsored by today. They're amazing. They do like geeky fitness stuff. Like it was like really blending like the nerd culture when nerds started to get into the gym and work out. And I was like, yes, this is great. So when they would send me like a new shirt, I would create a skit based around it. So the one that sticks out is I did a skit that was it was a Pokemon Go shirt. It was like I poking Pokemon Go to the gym or something. It was something like that. It was along on a it was funnier than that. But yeah. So I would create a skit for it. So I did this whole skit about like trying to catch a Pidgey because they were everywhere like when it first started. And I was unable to catch it. And so I went to the gym and so I started like doing like extensions, like throwing the Pokeball and stuff. And then yeah. And so I just created comedy skits because I just enjoyed it. And yeah, that was, oh man, that was back in like 2015. Yeah, that
Oh,
was.
wow.
So I've been doing it a while. Like I said, like before it was called content creation back in my day. Yeah, there's yeah, I've had similar like conversations with like other content creators when they're like, "Oh, how long have you been a content creator?" And I was like, "I don't know. Like, when did that term become a thing?" So, yeah. So that's kind of how I fell into just creating content and being on camera and filming stuff like myself. And then, yeah, and then I got into D&D to get back to the other party question. I got into D&D like 2019. And then, you know, like most people, it then became, you know, 90% of my personality. And so, following that, I was like, well, I want to combine like a nod to like my fitness background and things, but then also like the D&D content stuff. And so I combined those two things to make Swole Initiative. But just before that, I was doing beard modeling for content creation. I was doing like self-portrait photography and things, like dramatic portraits and things, when that was big on Instagram. And then, you know, I was creating D&D content for a couple of years. And then TikTok started, and I hated TikTok, but I liked the idea. And then Instagram started doing it. And that's when I was like, hey, like, I'll do it on Instagram. I don't mind that. And so it just like took off from there. And then, you know, years later, here I am.
Okay. So we have a lot to dive into here.
I did warn you.
It's amazing. Also, like, the beard modeling is so cool. You do have a legendary beard.
It was a lot bigger as well. It was like big. Like, the photos are still on my Instagram if you go back far enough. So
amazing. Okay, let me take you back a little before actually today and all we have to discuss here. You mentioned moving from Australia, and you are in America right now.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about that kind of change, because that's huge.
Yeah. So I'm Welsh, born and raised in Wales in the UK. And then there was a like a fitness boom as I was becoming a personal trainer, like when I first started getting qualified, and that was like 2011. And then I moved to Australia in 2012. And I spent a couple of years there, got more qualifications and picked up that stuff. And then, and then I moved back home for a little bit and then headed out to, America. So yeah, I've jumped around a lot. But yes, in terms of like, cultural differences, massive. Going from Wales to Australia wasn't too bad. Like, they're pretty, pretty similar. There was a lot of Welsh that kind of established, 'cause we all got transported off by the English as a punishment. So there's a lot of Welsh people in Australia, and so like the attitudes are kind of similar. And then but moving to the southern US in the Bible Belt, that was from going from Sydney, Australia, to little town Bible Belt was a big culture shock. I had to tone myself down quite a bit to kind of fit in a little bit, but I love Australia. I loved my life out there and things, but you know, here I have my wife and my kids and things, and so I'm a little bit biased. But also, what I love about the US is the fact that if you put your nose down and work hard enough, there's a good chance that you can make something of yourself. Whereas like in Wales, it's such like an economically underdeveloped country that it's like the town that I grew up in, Bridgend, same town that Bullet for My Valentine, famous metal band, came from. Everyone jokes about it. The fact that everyone tries to leave and then they get pulled back in. And I was determined to not be that. And so, yes, so I'm like 10 years on. So I think I'm okay right now. but yeah, I love the opportunities out here as well.
Amazing. That's like, you're very in tune with the American dream.
Yes, hopefully. I hope so.
Okay, amazing. And also one other thing that is very kind of piques my curiosity. Like, you went from bodybuilding and like being a powerlifter, like being very focused on fitness, into D&D and into storytelling, which is arguably a very nerdy nerdy thing to do. What was that like in terms of your perception of yourself or perception of others? Like, did the community change their a kind of relationship with you for doing that transition?
Yeah, good question. So myself, I was a nerd before I was like a fitness guy. Like I was super skinny as a kid, but always played sports, but was super into like anything nerdy, comic books, big into like high fantasy stuff, especially in Wales. Like all of our like culture is kind of borrowed by a lot of like high fantasy literature and things, tales about dragons and fairies, and like we have elves and we have like goblin type gnomes that kind of live in the mines and knock on the walls and stuff. So grew up kind of embedded in that world. And so that was always a huge part of my upbringing and my life. And then I got into the fitness side. I managed to put on a little bit of weight, look a little bit healthier. So, it was a big focus of mine because I was competing in powerlifting, and that was kind of a driving force behind what was keeping me in the gym myself, just for my goals. And I didn't really. So the thing that started happening that made me kind of take a step back from fitness was that injuries started cropping up. So just, you know, I'd played rugby since I was 7 years old. And so, you know, up through 18. So that's instantly like almost, well, it was like 11 years of full contact sport, like week in, week out and things. And just little bits, niggles and stuff became worse when you're training at such like a high intensity and high volume. You know, squatting 3-4 times a week, and you know, just little things. If you moved slightly wrong, it would activate like this old injury, and it would take you out for a couple of weeks. And I got into this cycle where I realized that I was just like getting healthy, getting into the gym, 4 weeks later, injuring myself, and then having to be out for a couple of weeks, and then starting again. And it was just this big cycle. So I actually stepped back from powerlifting and competing in powerlifting, just because I couldn't maintain, like my body couldn't maintain that level of abuse to push me to continually get stronger and stronger, to be on a competitive level. And so I did go through a little bit of a crisis because that was such like the perception of me on like social media and things was very much centered around fitness and lifting. Like they expected videos and things of me picking up 600 pounds and like, you know, like all of these like PRs and stuff. And then it got to a point where I was like, I don't have anything impressive as I saw to film and things. And that's when I started getting into the like the beard modeling stuff. It was just like, oh, you know, like I can work out to just look good and be healthy, and then I can use that in my content with like my portrait stuff. And so I used that, and then which was a shift in itself. And then to shift again, but like heavily into like the nerdy side of my personality. I did it incrementally over a little while. I was like, oh, you know, like here's some portrait photography, but I'm holding like the player's handbook, or you know, there's some dice in the picture and little bits like that. And then I was like, I'm just gonna jump straight in. Like as soon as the real stuff happened, I just jumped straight into it because of my background with like skit creation and things. And yeah, I lost quite a bit of my following, but I was like this is making me happy to do it. So, and the other stuff was just me doing it in the hopes that it would get me somewhere that I wanted to be. And so I did lose a little bit of following, and then, you know, gained a lot overall. So it was obvious where like my real like passion and the value that I can bring is in this sector, and it was never in like the other ones.
There are so many reels that you created on Instagram that I can just rewatch over and over again.
Like, thank you.
There's one of them, the one with the "I need an adult. I'm an adult." Oh.
Yeah, the DM that gets stuck. Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun one. So it's the whole like, you can't see that the character is the dungeon master, and it's like, oh no, something's happened. I need an adult. And then it zooms out and there's the screen there, and it's like, oh no, I am the adult. So yeah, that was fun one, because I started playing with camera angles a lot and transitioning to different scenes and things. And so that really helped me get into what I do now, which is like professional videography and stuff. So yeah,
I did want, that's a good segue. I did want to ask you, I also told you this in multiple Discord messages over the times we chatted already. You always have such amazing lighting and like the quality of the video and all that. Where does that knowledge come from? Like, did you take a course? Like, did you just experiment? Like, where does it come from?
Yeah, so I have ADHD. So I... like everyone that works in this field.
Perfect answer.
Yeah, so I got hyper-focused on... Take a step back. It came from portrait photography, like pulling lighting in. So I was always more of a fan of flash photography than I was natural light photography. And so I would have to learn how to diffuse light, how to put the flash, how, like, what angle, what height, like, to get, you know, I try and create like a Rembrandt lighting on my face because I like it. Backlighting, hair lighting, like all of these different things stemmed from my photography side that I took a little bit of. And then when I started really getting into videography, started pulling those skill sets back into play. And just diving into a lot of YouTube tutorials. Like, I will... Because again, my ADHD, I will be doing something, and if I have something on in the background, it kind of cancels out all of the other distractions. And so I'll have like tutorial videos playing for whatever I'm like trying to learn more about at that time. And so just absorbing all of this information and things. And then, when we started streaming, that was when I was like, okay, like we need to like start having like good lighting and, just to stand out, you know, production level really comes across when you have to scan through a million streams that Twitch just kind of like throws at you in seemingly random order. Production quality was always like super important to me. And so that was kind of the driving force behind like, oh, how can I light things? How can I do this? How can I do that? Like, even in like my reels and stuff now, I still use like, I use my cinema level camera and like I'll carry around my giant like key light with me and things like, so I can light myself properly. But it helps, right? Like that level of care that you take to want for your content to be or your media or whatever you're producing to be at that extra level higher, it makes you stand out, and I think it's appreciated.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, I it's the kind of thing that I always notice, and over the years now that I've been scanning YouTube for D&D streams and Twitch as well, it's always like the stream that has like the more production quality, it's like the stream that I'm like, okay, and then I'm not like scrolling away, I'm like, let's listen.
Like, yeah, like, it pulls you in to just like pause for a minute just to see if there's something there, and yeah. Then you know if we're delivering something like good in terms of like storytelling and stuff, that's when it's like, okay, I'll stick around for a little bit, and then
exactly.
It continues from there.
another good segue that you prompted here was streaming. And before we get to actual streaming, because there are a lot of streams that the channel Swole Initiative produces, tell me about like the moment where you decide, I'm going to start a campaign, or I'm going to start this thing called Swole Initiative. What was the pivotal moment behind that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I got asked to be on a different channel to stream, and I was asked to be in two different campaigns, and so I was in that on that channel. And then there was like a change in like the ownership and the structure and things, and I was brought into like the management side. And there was just a difference of opinions within like the team that was kind of left after the main person left. And I was just like, I really don't agree with the direction that you want to go in. And I don't think, excuse me, I don't think that we're going to come to like an amicable place. So I'm just gonna go and create my own thing that I can do that over there. And like, there was no bad blood or anything like with me leaving. Yeah, but on that channel as well, I was getting into DMing a home game a lot more. And I was like, oh no, I really like DMing, like running the game and like having those like drop moments and seeing the reaction from the players and stuff. Like that's what I really like. And so I started a campaign on that channel, which became Fables of Galia, which is the current campaign. We've been going almost 2.5 years now. On the same campaign. I met with all of the players and everything, and I was like, hey, like, this is kind of what's going on. I'd really like to continue telling this story because everyone bought in. Like, you've seen the streams, like, everyone cosplays. I never asked anyone to. Like, that was never me. It was just like, we should all cosplay our characters. And I was like, okay. And again, that's something that stands out, like, when you're scrolling through. It's like, oh, like, they look like their art. And so, yeah, then me leaving and starting up the Swole Initiative Network, which was, like, the group of us, which is slightly different. So I run that with Betty, my wife, and Mike O'Neill, the Short Nord. He does all of our tech stuff. He's an absolute wizard with it. Allows me to be able to concentrate on what I'm doing and not like running streams at the same time. But yeah, and then we just started creating that. And it was funny because then after the shows, like when we were by ourselves, after the shows and stuff, we would hang on like the call until like 3 a.m. just chatting and things. And we got so close so quickly. Like now, like whenever there's a convention that I'm going to, like everyone's trying to see if they can go as well so that we can all do like another meetup. Like we're going to meet up at GaryCon this year for D&D 50, which I'm super excited about. But yeah, and now like they're some of my absolute best friends in the world.
That's amazing. It's so cool like how D&D brings people together in so many ways. Okay, so we talked about like how you started, and we talked about reels and all that. Tell me a bit about how it was to actually grow an audience. Like you have right now a lot of people following you on Instagram. I'm not sure how many people are watching your streams because when they happen, I'm sleeping. But how was it to go from beginning Swole Initiative and now like being this person who people look up to and you have built a following of D&D nerds that want to see what you create?
Yeah. So originally when I just started creating content, I just started creating funny stuff. Like, cause that's my fallback all the time. Comedy is always my fallback. And then, you know, as I started picking up a little bit of steam, I wanted to use my platform for something positive. And so a big part of that was like creating a space where people who were new to the hobby could come and talk and ask me questions. And I would answer and give them like my best advice, like because D&D becomes like this weird, it's a weird hobby because it's almost innately gatekept, because you almost always need to know someone who knows how it goes to then learn, and then, you know, then the group starts to learn, and then that gets passed on later. So it's an odd hobby. So I wanted to kind of break down that barrier a little bit and just be a resource. And I wanted, I wanted to create like a positive environment. As far as building the audience, when I started switching to that being more of my mission, like I joke around by being the Oath of Positivity Paladin. I think that was the start of like the driving force where a lot more people started paying attention and started realizing that I had sort of more valuable things to say. But also I think with the platform that I have grown, I think it's important for people who look like me to create platforms for other people, be it LGBTQ, be it different, you know, different colored skins, like whatever. Making sure that I am pushing the way forward to then give these platforms to these other people so that they get elevated up, I think is a super important part of my mission. And that's a lot of why I do the what is now a series of live plays, the Himbo series that I've been running live. That was my whole thing, was just like, you know, I am a straight white male with a big beard who plays D&D, like, shock, right? So it was very much like, hey, like, I don't want to create like these, like be a stereotypical version of that. Like, I want to use that so people go, oh yeah, I'm comfortable with how you look and the things you say. And then I'm like, oh, actually, like, I'm extremely pro LGBTQ, like pro representation across racially and things. But I don't feel like I need a clap for it, right? Like, this should be something that we all, like, another guy that does it a lot is Johnny Stanton, previously of the NFL and now of the tabletop sphere that we've kind of adopted him in. He's of the same mind, you know. But yeah, so building that kind of inclusivity was really important to building my audience overall. In terms of Twitch is funny, right? So Twitch is an odd platform because it's not one that you really get promoted on. You can have a stream going, and then I will see in the chat, like, a little window comes down and says, hey, this person's online, want to go there? And I'm like, stop it! Like, I worked hard to get these people here. And also it's a big, like, Twitch being absolutely live it's a big ask for people, especially for long form content. You know, we sit down, we stream for 3 hours minimum, usually, like, for in terms of like the storytelling stuff. We do other streams, like fun ones, but as far as that goes, like, we go for 3 hours, you know, and with breaks and things, it ends up being like a little over 2.5 hours of like actual solid like gameplay storytelling. And that's a big ask for people's attention and time as well. And so our audience size fluctuates, so it goes anywhere from like 20 up to like 50, topping out around 60, like on good days and things. And then, you know, and then that comes back down. It's all ebbs and flows as well. But yeah, so it's around that, but like that, then we have like the YouTube channel, which is like where we put our VODs and stuff, which has its own audience, which is separate from the Twitch as well, which I'm catching up on uploading, in case anyone's wondering. But I get messages saying like, hey, thank you for uploading it to YouTube because I play it while I'm doing X, Y, or Z. And so, yeah. Yeah, so like so as far as like the Twitch audience goes, I have to remind myself not to take it to heart when it's a low audience, because holy crap, the amount of D&D streams that go on now, which was a big thing, like at the turn of this year, our audience started dropping off, but then I looked at the stats and there's like, you know, 50 million extra streams that are happening at the same time. And I'm like, we're just like, we're dropping the bucket, right? Because we weren't sort of building at the early days of Twitch. And, you know, we've only been a channel for like two years. And so, yeah, I'm pretty happy with where we're at, like in terms of audience size. And, you know, the community's great as well. Like, see them going off in the chat. Like, they have their own in jokes about the stories and stuff. And I'm like, that's beautiful for me as the story, like, the story guide, I would say, rather than the storyteller. Because I do give my players a lot of room to breathe. But it's really cool to see them so invested that they're creating in jokes within themselves.
Okay, that's very
cool. I hope I answered your question.
You did. Yeah.
I think you can extract an answer from somewhere in there.
I did want to say that it's so funny that you mentioned Johnny. As we are filming this, and this is a little tidbit for the audience.
He's setting up an interview with him as well?
No, we just released our interview with him on the channel on YouTube. Released now with Cody, my co-host. So now you know when we recorded this interview.
Yeah, no, Johnny is awesome. And he's such a, like a ball of positivity as well. That we kind of recognize that we're doing the same things. And we're a lot of times we're on the same page with a lot. So we have some projects coming up that we're working on together. Mm-hmm. And he was one of my extra himbos, more himbos at PAX Unplugged, which was really cool to be able to play with him. He was meant to be at the Gen Con one, the first one, couldn't make it. And so, yeah, hopefully we'll be back at Gen Con this year to retell, or not retell, but do the sequel.
I do have a question for you. Because we don't have fan questions for this one, I think we always have like this little segment, Roll for Spoilers. Which we do before or during fan questions. And I'm wondering if you want me, if it's okay with you that I will roll and then you will, according to the answer, you will reveal any kind of detail about any upcoming project.
Ooh, okay. I will preface that I am under several NDAs.
Yeah, so don't.
I'm limited with what I can say, but yes, I will say as much as I can, okay, depending on your role.
I have this little D20. Let's see how I roll. Okay, so that's a 6. What do you want to say on a 6?
6, okay. A 6 on an insight check with what I've said so far. Yeah, so expect more live plays coming out through the year. Already talking with conventions and things, setting up more funny stories that have underlying positive messages in them. like if you didn't see the PAX game, I'm not sure, because they didn't.
Yeah, I think I missed the time it was like open or something.
Yeah,
on Twitch.
Yeah, they haven't uploaded it to YouTube yet, but that one, the himbos, shimbos, and thembos faced toxic masculinity. That was the big bad in that one.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, so it's like comedy, positive messaging. So expect more of that. I'm a six. There's also my YouTube channel, which I'm after we get off here, I will be making some more stuff. So that'll be launching, which includes some tutorials. Like I can talk about this stuff because I've already talked about it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll be getting some tutorials up for how to get into D&D to start off with, because that's like the first barrier. And then also storytelling tips and some fun challenges as well.
Okay, so. Cool. That's plenty.
That was a generous six.
Yeah, that's plenty. Okay, so I do want to steer us back into your streams. And we talked about storytelling and all that. One question that is interesting is, What are your inspirations for storytelling? What are the stories that you enjoy?
Oh, there's so many. So I grew up around like the high fantasy stuff. So grew up reading Chronicles of Narnia, the Lord of the Rings, and the Hobbit. Those are the ones that kind of stick out from like early on. And then I got into comic books, which told like great stories based around, you know, superheroes and stuff. So it was almost seen as childish because of the nature of the media or medium, I should say. But if you really break down like the storytelling and stuff, like there's heartbreak in there. There's like real conviction of morals and things. And, you know, a superhero is a really good avatar to throw into like a moral dilemma, because they are inherently like a moral standing incarnate, you know? And so I think that, now that I'm talking about it out loud, I think that influenced a lot of how I storytell, because I do like to bring my players into a space where they can make the decision, but it is a space of conflict, like where they can really develop their characters as well. And I'm very like hands off, like I'll lead them to the situation and then be like, it's you now. A lot of like my villains will tend to be gray villains.
Okay.
The sort of villain that you get there and you think you know everything about them and you're like, yeah, we're about to kill you and end your like path of destruction or whatever. And then they go into a little bit of a monologue and you start going, he's making some good points. So that's what I find really intriguing. But as far as like the Fables of Galia goes, that there's been a lot of breadcrumbs. I'm a very slow burn, which is probably again like comic book influenced, just because like it goes for years as like a storyline. Because they just release it every like 2 weeks or every month, depending on what like strand it is. And you get those like breadcrumbs that lead you along and things. And, you know, things aren't resolved super quickly. Like they open a loop and you won't close that loop, or you'll forget about that loop for a couple of months. And then, you know, it comes back around and you're like, oh no, like that little thing that was said all the way back there actually meant a really big thing. That's what I try and emulate in my storytelling as far as like games go, which is why I love like longer campaigns to have the freedom to be able to not be constrained by a certain amount of like, oh, we've got to do this in like 6 episodes. But to be able to just have like a complete sandbox to play in. I've never sort of railroaded my players to go in one direction or another. In fact, in the like episode, I think 3, they went in the complete opposite direction than I had planned for. And so like, I was like, oh, I got to write some stuff, I guess. And so, yeah. But back to like what influenced my storytelling. Then later I got into other books. I was big into Anne Rice, The Vampire Chronicles, The Vampire Lestat, and so forth. I went through a big horror phase. The Witcher books by Andrzej Sapkowski, which are incredible. So like even, and I think that also adds to the way that the fights are described. Like you can see it so vividly, even translated from, is it Polish? Is it Polish, I think.
Yeah.
Like translated out of Polish and into English or into any other language, like you're reading it and it just, it feels like it was written in English because it tells the story of the fight so beautifully and poetically. And I really try and pull that into my sort of my battles and things like in D&D or whatever game we're playing. I always like my battles to have weight to them. I don't like occasionally we'll do like, oh, you know, you're traveling through the woods, like roll a d20, we'll see what happens. And I'll have written a predetermined table. But if they know that they're going into a fight, like I want there to be like an emotional pull that drags them in. That, you know, it's too easy to be able to be like, hey, we're not like world renowned heroes. We could bounce. We could be safe, you know? And to add that sort of emotional hook really brings about the storytelling in the battle itself. So then with that emotional hook, my players then take that and run with it. And so their actions in the battle, it's not just like, okay, we're going to target the spellcaster, we're going to take those out, then we're going to take bop, 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 bop. It's not like that. It's not like, they don't play it like chess. They're very intelligent players, which means I have to do a lot of design work. But they're focused on their character actions, which then might not be optimal in that moment, but it makes for such a good story moment, you know? And then being able to have that back and forth, that dialogue, I'm forgetting his name, there's the mage that... the mage that Geralt fights for Yennefer. It's Yennefer's other partner. I can't remember his name.
I know who you're talking about, and
but,
I can't remember
but in the name books, in, yeah, yeah, and in the books, there's like a back and forth like between them and things, and so I'll add that in, you know, like throwing in like, you know, like the minions might just be like shouting to one another and like commands and what have you, but like the main antagonist in that moment will be also emotionally invested in this. And so you get a lot of that back and forth and like, or trying to explain what they're doing, like stand down, we're doing this. Like, don't you care about this? Which is then like adding more complications into it that you have to like think about, but you've only got 6 seconds. So it's like, ah, but yeah, very long story. But yeah, I don't think I'd thought about that until you asked that question. So thank you for that. That was a good self-reflective dive.
Okay. So we talked about storytelling. We talked about kind of where you are today. And I do want to ask you, if you had to give yourself from a few years ago some advice, from your point of view right now, what kind of advice would you give Jay from a few years ago?
Okay. So
we dive deep on this podcast.
Yeah, that's so. I constantly fight with the voice in the back of my head, that constantly says, like, you're not doing this well enough. Why bother creating this? It's not going to be good. And so I would. When I moved into media creation and like media production and content creation as like a full-time position, I would find myself like sometimes like paralyzed with anxiety. Just like that voice was just way louder than anything else. And so I just wouldn't start anything, and I would get in these horrible cycles. So I think I would just tell myself to stay the course, that it does get better. It doesn't go away at all. And I was horrified to, well, no, I wasn't horrified to meet, but I met Matthew Mercer, and we kind of connected over this level of imposter syndrome that we both deal with, and was horrified to hear that it's still with him at this point. Like, he still sees other storytellers and he's like, man, they're so much better than me. Which was like, it doesn't just go away when you get to that level. Like, I think I would advise myself to stay the course and to not listen to that voice. It's been an interesting journey, like, of self-reflection and things, like a lot of like shadow work and things, like, to quote, I think it's Jung. But it's been an interesting journey. And I don't think I would want to do it any differently, because it's made me who I am now. So if I didn't have that adversity, then I might not be who I am. I might not be as grateful for all of the opportunities and things that I'm getting now. And I'm just truly grateful that even in the time periods where I fell off creating content and I was like burning myself out, because I was like, if I stop creating content, everyone's gonna just like forget about me because I'm no one. And then, you know, I had to take a couple weeks off. I think it was like a month, like around Christmas time. And everyone was so supportive and just like, hey, no, look after yourself. Like, we can handle like not laughing at your like 10-second videos for a couple weeks. And so, I think I was so worried at that time that I wouldn't give myself permission to take a break. So maybe going back and saying you can rest would be a good one.
I love that. That's such a good advice for any up and coming content creator as well. I also resonate with that. I experienced burnout a few times since I started this podcast and other content things. So giving yourself permission to rest is well worth it, and a good advice for anyone.
It's an odd thing, right? Because it's such a creative field. Like, even without like content creation for like social media and stuff, like when I do like my media production and things, like creating product videography and doing like how to play videos for board game companies and things, like that kind of stuff, like, it just sometimes you're just not in that creative headspace. Like, you know, it's not like data entry. It's not like it's always like, okay, I click this, I do this, and then I do this, and then I clock out and I go home, which I have done that before. I do enjoy this way more. I enjoy the creativity way more. But at the same time, sometimes it's like banging your head against a brick wall because it's like, I don't have any ideas. And then it's like, and then you get that guilt because it's like, well, I worked for like 4 hours today and I have, you know, Boblin the Goblin and a weird tree written down on my bit of paper, you know? And I'm like, that's nothing. And so then you end up like working way into the night to like make it up because you feel like you didn't accomplish anything. And yeah, and then it's a hard switch to turn off with content creation, which is why I think we're discovering a lot now, like a couple of years on from it being like a thing, that so many people are burning out and leaving. Like even on YouTube, like there's been a ton of like huge creators just being like, I'm done. And like nothing really happened. They were just done. Like the pressure of having to produce more, be more creative, be funnier, be more interesting, have more advice, have more insight and things. And, you know, and then especially if you've got that voice in the back of your head, like especially with me, like when I was talking about starting the YouTube channel with having like tutorials for beginners, in the back of my head, it was like, you don't have anything of value to say. Like, you know, tell them to get the starter kit and that's about it. You know, like, you know? The burnout being around content creators is a huge thing. I actually saw an interview with, I think it was, do you know Jay Klaus, the channel? He talks with a lot of creators at a long form.
The name like sounds familiar, but doesn't like, I don't see the face in my mind right now.
He spoke to a Harvard psychologist or psychiatrist. I can't remember which one it was, but I do know they're different. don't come for me. But he spoke to this Harvard psych, who then became a like gaming creator as well, like a gaming streamer. And so he had so much insightful things to say because he could take a step back and analyze it from like a psychological perspective of like why things are happening. And I watched that and I was just like, yes, yes to all of these things. And so I kind of took that on board. And that's why, you know, while I've been prepping to release my YouTube channel, because I want to start it with like 5 videos for people to watch, you know, like when we get going, I'm going to release 5 at once. And it's like, there you go. Like, here's a smattering of what to expect. But while I'm doing that, I'm not doing the other thing. And so it's, I've been like posting up some of my like greatest hits, you know, some of like my more popular videos and just like saying messages of thank you and stuff like this. It was fun to create. I'm so glad that it was able to resonate and things. And I was able to get to talk to so many of you like this. And cause there's going to be a shift in my content again, within the same niche this time, but it's going to shift and there's going to be a lot more, of just me speaking to the camera and going through like, hey, this is an issue. This is a barrier. I'm going to create community posts where people can vote on like issues that they have, like to get into D&D or as a game master, like I come up against X, Y, and Z. Like what should I do? And be able to then grab that and be like, okay, let's create a whole video on it. And be able to like break those barriers down. Because I came up against it trying to get into it as well. Like I just didn't know how to do it. I knew that I loved character work and voice work and things, but I didn't know how to play. I didn't know how to start. And so I think recognizing that stuff for me early on has made me always want to like break that down. It kind of sends back to being a coach, right? So I'm like almost coaching people into D&D stuff. But Yeah, so hopefully people will enjoy and find value in the new stuff, because I'm not just going to be doing long form, I will be doing short form still, but it will be more like informational based.
Yeah, I love that, because it's also like the kind of lesson that every content creator needs to learn at some point, that nothing you say is really new. People are always like going to say the same messages, mm-hmm. but with their own voices in their own way. So I love that you like take your experiences and all that you learned and now like going to create this space for others to learn from you in your own voice and in your own way. Which is fantastic, actually.
You hit the nail on the head. Like a long time ago, I'll try not to make this another big story, but a long time ago in a previous life, I was a teacher for kids with learning difficulties, but within a mainstream school. And so I would run these extra classes in order to like get them up to speed to do their first set of qualifications. In the UK, that's at like 15, 16 years old. Yeah, so that's where I discovered like my love of explaining and breaking down and teaching things. And I think I forgot where I was going with that. that's right, what you said. Yes. see, we get there. ADHD, man. What I was going to say was that you can hear the same explanation from like a million different people and be like, I don't get it. And then the million and first person says it slightly differently in a way that you haven't heard before. And then it just clicks. What I noticed on YouTube is that most of the tutorial stuff is coming from people who have been in the hobby for a really long time. I haven't been in that for, I haven't done it for 20, 30 years, you know? And so using the fact that I'm fairly new, in the sphere, with like my coaching and teaching background, I really want to like break it down into like really simple, easy to digest chunks. I'm not going to, here's how we create a character in one video, you know, it'll be like, hey, this is this part of a character sheet. Like I did that with, the Norse Foundry YouTube, but breaking it down into sections where, you know, I use YouTube like Google, basically. Like if I want to know something, I use YouTube as Google.
YouTube is a search engine.
Yeah, exactly. Asking those like simple questions and stuff, like a lot of times it'll be answered, but within this like gargantuan video about a lot of other stuff. Someone that does really, really well with what I'm talking about doing is Jenny D. I think she does a fantastic job with picking out like niche little things that you wouldn't think of being an issue and being like, hey, no, this is an actual issue and this is how I deal with it. In terms of like the like interpersonal side of things. And then there's like my friend Kelly and Monty from the Dungeon Dudes who do like the mechanical aspects and how to deal with this at the table and things. And so I love that juxtaposition as like on and off the table of content that they do. And hopefully I'll be somewhere in the middle, just kind of do my own thing. So yeah.
Amazing. Wow.
I think I failed at keeping that short, so.
there's so many cool things that you're doing. I do want to ask you, we are kind of like nearing my final question here.
Okay.
I have two more questions for you. Like the first one is if you now, I want to get us to like we talked before about the advice that you would tell yourself, and now I want you to kind of look back to where you are now, and I want to know what is something or some things that you are most proud of in your journey so far.
in 2019, I my wife was big into like manifesting things. Like we were in not a great part of our like excuse me, we were not in a great part of our like we were great, but financially we weren't great. Like we were in somewhat of a rut. And so to keep our sort of heads up, she was big on talking about manifesting. And so she was like, manifest your goals. What do you want to do? And so this was not long after I had watched, I hadn't watched it, but I'd heard of and seen clips of Critical Role doing Gen Con that year. On the main stage and like to a live crowd. And I was like, man, that's so cool. Like, cause I used to like be on stage. I was a signed musician, through my 20s. And, before that I was in musical theater through school. And, I was like, okay, I'm gonna manifest three things. First one is I want to run a game on the main stage at Gen Con. The second one was, thank you. The second one was to meet Matthew Mercer, which all happened on the same weekend. the third one was to work on something at the Critical Role studio, which is still floating around out there, but I'm like the patent is going there, so I'm like, I'm keeping my eyes on the prize, and you know, I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing and carving out my own path, and hopefully one day that would be I don't know what I would do if I capped all three.
Okay,
so that would be like my most proud thing, is that like I stuck to my own thing. And, you know, I've gotten two out of the three done, working on the last one. I gotta make more friends, I guess.
Listen, Brennan did Calamity, which was four episodes. I mean, who knows?
Yes. Yeah. Met Brennan as well. Brennan, absolutely incredible human, you know. He gave me some absolutely stellar advice. It was at the Wizards of the Coast party at Gen Con, and I met him, was introduced, and said, oh, you know, it's my first stage game and things. And he was like, oh, well, you know, the biggest thing to remember about running a game on the main stage is that you have 2 hours, but you have to plan for 90 minutes because of the interaction with the crowd. So you don't have that on stream. You don't have that on stream. It's just you and your players and you just go. But live, people clapping, cheering, you know, shouting things out, joining in with jokes, or we would like ask the audience what they thought and things. And so that like greatly shortened my time. And so the way that I built the game was very modular, so I could move things around so that if I was in a panic, I could take some stuff out. And so I was able to go back and rejig the way that I had planned the game to go. And we finished at like 2 hours and 1 minute. Like that was, so I was, very thankful to Brennan for that advice.
Yeah. We love Brennan on this channel. Shout out to Brennan Lee Mulligan. Okay, cool. So I think at some point we will need a part two, because there's still so much to talk to you about. But for now, before I let you go with one final question, I do want you to tell people who are watching this where they can find you. Where do you want to send them next after watching this interview?
Yeah. So my name is Jay Foster. I go by the moniker of Swole Initiative on the internet. I create comedy, informative, positive videos based around tabletop stuff, as well as DMing across conventions on live stages and on Twitch and YouTube. You can find me streaming on Twitch at the Swole Initiative Network. You can find all of our VODs and things at youtube.com/@Swole Initiative Network. I think that's how it does now. They keep changing it. And I'm on Instagram and TikTok at Swole Initiative. And my upcoming YouTube channel, which has some stuff on it, but it's just some shorts to kind of get the content rolling. But you can find that at Swole Initiative on YouTube as well.
Amazing. We will have all of those links in the description as well. And now the final question, which is kind of the logical conclusion to our discussion today. We talked about your past. Now it's time to talk about the future. I'm going to actually make you think about it. And I want you to tell me what's in the future for Jay, also known as Swole Initiative Foster.
I want to work with more publishers that I resonate with. So I have a couple of things in the pipeline with Hunters Entertainment. Love those guys to bits. And they're very much like the metal kids of the TTRPG world. So I just resonate with them really well. Would love to get into more stuff with them. I do have a 5-year plan to be out in the LA area to do more and bigger things. And you will see me, without talking too much, you will see me on stages this year. I'm going to try and get out to San Diego Comic-Con this year as well. But expect to see me at Gen Con and PAX again, PAX Unplugged. Things that I can talk about. I have just submitted a world that I created from scratch that has nothing to do with Galia. A contribution to a world setting book. So that will be, I believe, kickstarting possibly within the next year, but I can now say I'm a writer, because I didn't just make it up on the fly. I now write things, which was another challenge that was really fun. I think mainly because I usually allow my players to kind of shape the worlds as well, but for me to have to just like implement all of the lore and history and people like right off the bat was an interesting challenge. So that was pretty exciting. And then the YouTube thing. So, all right. If I speak it out, then I have to do it, right? I plan to do, I think I agreed on 5 back-to-back games, GMing live streamed on YouTube, to raise money for a charity that I'm leaning towards one, but I want to do some research first. I'm going to run basically like 24 hours plus of GMing nonstop on stream for charity. And I'm going to try and rope in some of my like higher profile friends and things. I won't say their names because they haven't like 100% done anything, but it's not going to be one continuous thing. It's going to be like 5 independent stories, which will be the challenge, I guess, is being awake enough to still be able to tell the story. that's one of my plans to do on the YouTube channel. And so I plan to have like videos showing the organization, like the prep stuff, then the actual stream itself. And then afterwards, in between, I'm going to record some footage of me like behind the scenes, how I'm feeling, how things are going, etc. And it'll be kind of behind the scenes vlogging stuff that I'll release after the stream. So expect a lot more content that I'm putting myself out there. like as a person, and just being honest about stuff. Also, I will be running, or should be, it's like 99%, should be running another panel at Gen Con on dealing with imposter syndrome as players, game masters. We ran it last year. I ran it with M from Blackwater D&D, Alicia Figuolo from Geek Therapeutics, my little big sis, and one of my best friends, Kyle Shire, who is one of the producers on Critical Role. And it was moderated by Anya Combs, another great friend of mine. It was a really intimate discussion, and we really bared ourselves out there in order to get across that it's a real thing that affects you, and it comes from a lot of different things that kind of snowball and put you in that position. And so, you know, ways to deal with it and things, and, you know, questions we ask ourselves, like, the voice is there, but why are you listening to it?
Yeah.
Which was Kyle's big one. And everyone was like hit with that, like, philosophical bomb. And I was like, I don't know why I listen to it, because I know what it does, and I know it's not right most of the time, but like, why do you find yourself in that position? Anyway, I'm rolling off again, but yes, lots of live stuff. I'm going to be focusing on the YouTube as basically my main social media outlet, doing a lot more long form content. Expect to see my face around on different places. And yeah, just more and more and more.